Okay, yeah, thanks very much. Thanks very much also for the invitation. So I'm really very much enjoying this program, this workshop. Well, Goethe once said, mathematicians are like Frenchmen. So whatever you say to them, they translate in their own language and soon become something completely different. So this very nicely describes my feeling that I had when I just when I first saw what mathematicians made out of conformal field theory. Goethe. You know Goethe? I mean, he's like Shakespeare, but in German. Okay, yeah, so, well, probably what I will try to do is try to speak a sort of Fringlish. I mean, of course, on the way, okay, over the years, I picked up a few words in French, and so I try to test them on you now, but still, of course, will be a very weird jargon, maybe a mixture of mathematical and physical jargon. Yeah, maybe to become a little more serious, a few words about the motivation. Well, there were three big themes basically indicated in the title. And maybe main motivation is understanding for me SL2R Wessling-Witten model, which after all is not solved. And I think this really, from at least the string theorist's perspective, is rather important motivation, because we don't know a single model for strings on Minkowskian curved spacetimes which we can solve. And that would be probably the first one where we could start with and really learn about effects on strings in curved spacetimes in Minkowskian signature. Well, there is, of course, a lot of important work on strings in, on ADS3 and so on. In particular, of course, specifically towards SL2R with Wessling-Witten, one should definitely mention the work of Maldacena Oguri and so on, which is important and definitely very well, outstanding piece of work, but it does not represent a complete solution. I mean, they did partial, they obtained partial results, they determined the spectrum, which is of course a very important piece of data. But as it came to the correlation functions, they really switched to Euclidean signature and used the Euclidean version of this Wessling-Witten model, where I had laid some foundations before that. And so in this respect, well, really, if it comes to correlation functions, the SL2R Wessling-Witten model, to my understanding, is not completely understood and is in fact a real challenge. I mean, as potential applications, say one could name that one could go down to the Minkowskian two-dimensional black hole and then study, for example, stringy Hawking radiation and stuff, if one really, well, understood what one is doing in this model. So I think really this is potential, well, this is important motivation, and sort of one of the points I'd like to make is that somehow understanding the links between all this stuff, quantum geometric Langlands and Liouville theory and so on, may offer us at least valuable hints for how to solve this theory. So that is sort of my physicist motivation. As mathematical motivation, I'd like to mention, well, that also within mathematics, people have started to think about a deformation of geometric Langlands. Well, there is work of Denis Gates-Gurry, Stoyanovsky, and so on. So there's some works and proposals in this direction, but I think, okay, this story is probably also in mathematics pretty much in its infancy. So, well, maybe it's good to look at this story from different points of view. So to get started and still say concerning motivation, let me remind you very schematically what geometric Langlands is, just to sort of prepare for indicating what I shall mean with quantum geometric Langlands. So it's supposed to be a correspondence between GL local systems on the one hand, the left-hand side associated loosely then with, well, in some sense precisely with B-brains, and on the other side there are the D-modules on G. I shall not explain much about this. This is, of course, very well done before my talk. So, and Well, furthermore, on Monday, Edward had taught us that, in fact, the right-hand side has an important and useful incarnation as in terms of, well, something related to conformal field theory, namely in terms of conformal blocks for the affine Kac-Moody algebra G hat, where, however, the level is specialized to the critical level. So that is, well, giving a representation of the D modules that appear on the right-hand side. And basically, this is what immediately suggests an obvious deformation, say, from a well, conformal field theorist's point of view, when you simply to drop this assumption that we want to work at critical level and to look at conformal blocks for fine Kac-Moody algebras at arbitrary level. That is, in this sense, kind of natural. So, write this. Actually, for today, or at least to begin with, I shall take a relatively pragmatic physicist point of view on this correspondence, namely to view basically the left-hand side as a parameterization for the right-hand side, so not talk about categories and so on, although maybe, well, in the end of the day, one should do this also for quantum. For the deformation I want to propose, and, well, actually, this was sort of the naive point of view, which first made me think that this is, well, also maybe interesting for me as a physicist, also same point of view that this here may be in particular represented by the eigenvalue equations for the Hitchin Hamiltonians when you quantize them. So what this amounts to is a parameterization of the spectrum of the Hitchin Hamiltonians, or more precisely, well, of the space of solutions to the eigenvalue equations for the Hitchin Hamiltonians. And that is, of course, a kind of a cool statement in its own right. Now, so, of course, then it's clear what we want to put here on the right-hand side. So G hat K conformal blocks, that is to represent, well, these are, as I shall recall in a moment, also D modules on bungee. Twisted D modules, if you want to be a little more precise about this. But somehow the, of course, somewhat less obvious question and is what to put on the left-hand side. And, well, one thing that with a bit of reflection one might come up with, and I think also this was proposed by mathematicians, by you and Stoyanovsky and Dennis Gatesbury and so on, I think, is here to think of conformal blocks for the W algebra associated to the Langlands dual Lie group. Well, I have not the time to give you the definition of the W algebra. It can be, for example, characterized in the Fréfiot representation of the fine Kac-Moody algebras as the intersection of certain operators, well, of the kernels of certain operators, which are given by the screening charges which appear in this Fréfiot representation. So the subalgebra, sort of the free field algebra, which commutes with the screening charges, then gives the definition of the W algebra, as was developed by Fagin and Frenkel. No, not W infinity, W associated to arbitrary Lie groups, the Lie algebras G. And of course, here, just to make the correspondence, we take the Langlands dual. If here is G, then here appears the Langlands dual, of course. Yeah. The scheme of things is always the same as in all this, in all this conference. I try to be coherent, except maybe, okay, I'm going to use X, I think, rather than C, but okay. Well, anyway, I will switch to the simplest of all these cases immediately, which is the Rossoro algebra. So, I cannot do much for arbitrary the algebras at the moment. So that's what of course then corresponds to Liouville theory. And maybe at this level, it's also useful and maybe important to advertise or to mention that you can think of the conformal blocks here on the left-hand side also as being parametrized by certain local systems. Just for those who know, these are the local systems coming from the null vector decoupling equations that are satisfied by the conformal blocks of these chiral algebras. So in some sense, however, in a somewhat non-trivial sense, you could also here view the left-hand side as being parametrized by local systems. Well, of course, no, okay, I come back to this hopefully later. EPZ, yes. So the BPZ equations, of course, will also give you a two-dimensional monodromy representation, so the solutions, and okay, the space of all such monodromy representations you can take as parametrizing the space of conformal blocks in some sense. But it's non-trivial how they do that, of course, in practice. Okay, so part two, well, I didn't think this was part one, you can edit in your own notes. I want to explain how to go from, well, the most important bit of this map, how to go from Virasoro to, say, well, let's be a little vague here, SO2, Westumino, Witten. Well, as the setup, here, we're having the Lie algebra SO2 hat with a level k. Generators, when I need them, will be denoted by j and a. A equals 0 plus minus. And I will consider representations denoted v, j, W, which are generated from a vector, not a highest weight vector in general. These representations are not highest weight representations in general. They are for W equals to 0, such that Jn plus W on Vj W equals 0. Jn minus W minus 1 minus Vj W equals 0. Jn 0. Jw equals 0 for n bigger than 0. And furthermore, this guy itself is eigenvector of J 0, 0. Vjw with eigenvalue J plus k over 2, here appears this parameter k, vjw. Well, for those who know, well, of course, for w equals to 0, we are having the good old highest weight representations. However, well, to have the full picture, which I will not be able to explain, but parts maybe, it's interesting to have these modifications with the parameter w, which in the physics literature is called the spectral float representation. So these were, by Malaseno and Oguri, found to be crucial if one wants to account fully for the spectrum of the SO2R within the Witten model. So, we should consider them. I will really explain the story about this spectral flow only very well, I will only make very few remarks about this and mostly restrict, in fact, to W equals to zero. Claim being that, of course, one can generalize this to W non-equals to zero with more work. So, the G hat conformal blocks, well, I allow myself to be brief, as Edward very nicely explained this already on Monday. So these are linear invariant functionals on tensor products of representations, JRWR, or maybe actually I wanted to make a shorthand. So all this we think of as being in general associated to a curve with maybe genus G and N marked points. So an invariant means that if I evaluate F on eta acting on a vector V which lives in this space, then this gives zero. So for V in this, say, call this N. And for all eta which are, well, twisted holomorphic, well, twisted meromorphic functions on X, very roughly. So, more precisely, sections, meromorphic sections of X, about 1n, living in GB, which is associated bundle B where here, well, actually that's maybe slightly tentative. What I propose is that it may be useful for some aspects to think of them as being VL2 bundles rather than SL2 bundles. Some sense, of course, you think the adjoint action, the determinant drops out, but well, on the other hand, the determinant has some extra, well, VL2 has some extra parameter, which is the degree. And it seems that maybe if you want to talk about Hecke operators and so on, it may be useful to have to keep this parameter for a moment. It's easier, yeah, that was sort of, well, just to write them down, these Hecke operators, at least. Well, what I understood was about VL2 and, okay. Okay, so, and of course, this is now defined fixing a particular bundle B, but wearing B, of course, what I generate is a sheaf of conformal blocks on bund G. Here, more precisely, I should add, at the end of the day, really, I also want to consider the variations of this marked point Z and of the complex structure on the Riemann surface as well. So really, the full picture will involve the moduli space of Riemann surfaces as well. The Lie algebra of the group. Well, and we physicists prefer to talk about functions rather than sheaves. So the poor physicists, sheaf function correspondence can be obtained here in this context quite easily. Namely, simply we may, instead of F, consider the evaluation on, well, highest weight vectors or, well, the generating vector of the representation in our case. So just on a particular vector. Actually, it does not matter so much which one we take. It is just like going from primary fields to descendants. And of course, this gives me some function on 1G, locally defined, of course, in some patches. And say, as a physicist, one would use for this function typically a notation like this one. So maybe that is useful for physicists among us as a helping to translate these languages. So that is the function on maybe a priori defined on some subsets. From G, N, so I want to consider these variations as well. And well, this function has this D-module structure. Seems too slow. Well, a very quick and dirty way of thinking about this, about it, is the following. If I act here on these vectors V by some general elements of the tensor product of Lie algebras, not one which is coming from a meromorphic function, then this can be rewritten in general as a infinitesimal motion on the moduli spaces here, say, on Bun G. So this is in some sense being the tensor product of the representations associated to the Rth side. And on the algebra we had. Well, when should view it probably the other way around. I mean, the left-hand side is giving the definition of the right-hand side, which makes sense because, well, due to this double coset description of Bun G, you can here basically, you have here some parts which act trivially on V, which are those, say, for example, annihilating highest weight vectors, and then there's some other part which you can pull out to the left if you wish due to the invariance property, and what remains has an interpretation as being a differential operator on Bun G. So that is in some sense really to be read that way around. And what this is in fact nothing but our well-known conformal water identities, or here current water identities. So the physicist's notation for something, well, equivalent would be something like this. So insertion of a current can be traded for a differential operator acting on the conformal block. And to remind you, the whole thing depends on the complex structure on the Riemann surface and the bundle we have chosen to twist our Lie algebra with. Dependence on what was completely trivial?
On the bundle of the
Well, it is, okay, you're in the sense that you're getting a vector bundle, right?
Not on the
the vector bundle. You can identify the fibers by means of a parallel transport, that is what you mean, right? It's Knicht.
Right. But here, the transport is kind of trivial. The bundle cannot be trivialized.
Yeah.
The reason is that if you have an intercomposition case, then changing the bundle, you can define new bundle by changing the bundle function on the point. Now we have a interpretation which we use with that. So you can absorb.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, and there's some parallel transport in this case still, but yes, right. Well, but it's in fact in this case, yeah, some of it can be integrated, but there is extra singularities. Anyway, that's there's monodromy. Yes, of course. In fact, okay, maybe just to remark this, there are extra singularities appearing here for SL2R, which have to do, well, with the moduli of Banji and mixed singularities, mixing moduli of Banji, and so one can see this very concretely. And in fact, this was what study of SL2R was a joint project begun long ago with Sylvain Ribot, and it has to do with properly understanding these mixed singularities. There we always got stuck, and somehow I think the point is that now, for example, Hecke algebra and so on gives a new point of view on this. And what this, if we also take into account Tsugawara construction and so on, gives us our famous partial differential equations for the function which I denoted f of v0. As an example, let me write it out for genus 0. And here, also to simplify life, I put these w parameters, the spectral flow, all to 0. But then for genus 0, what we definitely need to consider are bundles with parabolic structures. Which means that near the marked points, I restrict the gauge group to live in some Borel subgroup of GL2. And maybe a concrete way to parametrize, well, generic of those would be just to start from some standard Borel subgroup like that and conjugate it by some nilpotent element, which then introduces the parameter for the sort of twisted parabolic structure. So these parabolic structures, these are coming here as being parametrized by these parameters x. And well, then our Watt identities or E-module structure implies very well known and famous partial differential equations, which are the Knishin Zamolodchikov equations, let me write them out once. There's some differential operator dji. Oh, sorry. Maybe I want to use S and R. S, second order differential operator, which acts only on the x variables. And on G, where G is just my notation for the function, well, it's a function of x1 to xr, to xn, z1 to zn, which is nothing but this f of v0 that I've defined from the conformal blocks previously. So this guy is a second order differential operator. That is D, yeah, my handwriting's getting bad, so like that. Maybe more readable. Yes, thanks. Well, let me not write it, but just remark that, of course, in some way we were going from sheaves to functions. Well, actually, we were really going from sections of a sheaf to functions, to be honest. But we can go the other way around. We can, in principle, using this D-module structure, reconstruct the full conformal block from this particular value, namely, well, I mean, the values on other vectors are then traded for derivatives with respect to moduli or with respect to z that we can do. So there is no loss of information in this, in going to functions as we'd like to do. And well, furthermore, these, of course, that's what we would like to think of as being the analogs of automorphic forms, namely really functions on band G, which, yeah, are like the automorphic forms, which is, okay. Leave it with this remark. So, and very quickly about the left-hand side, I already said that here the W of the Langlands dual, the algebra, the W algebra, that is just the Rissoro algebra. And we consider representations, well, okay, generators, the standard name is Ln, where n runs over the integers. I probably don't have to write the algebra. The representations will be denoted W alpha, and they're such that Ln on some vector small w alpha is 0 for n bigger than 0. These are the standardized weight representations. So let me just maybe introduce the notation here for the eigenvalue of L0, which is chosen such that having a quadratic parametrization for the highest weight. Okay, so, and of course, we can then define the conformal blocks in complete analogy. So, from tensor products of W alpha R. Them, maybe rho. And the invariance condition now is defined by taking etas just being neuromorphic sections of the tangent bundle of x. So, neuromorphic vector field. And, well, we need to introduce the physicist notation as well. Maybe I should, yeah. So the physicist notation, I would use this one. So I alpha m depends on the complex structure, and that's the value that this linear functional takes on the product of highest weight vectors as before. And let me remark that if some of the alphas happen to be very special, namely such that the corresponding Verma module of the Virasoro algebra becomes degenerate, then this guy also satisfies a PDE, a very well-known and famous one, namely, it is annihilated by some differential operator, which I call DPZ. And after having chosen having chosen my coordinates, that is d squared by d z squared z r squared minus some 1 over z r minus z s, s not equals to r, d by d z s plus delta alpha s over z r minus z s squared, where this guy, I had introduced the delta alpha is just this guy here. Okay, so that is all pretty well known. I'm wasting too much of time on well-known stuff, I observe, but of course need some setup. D is the correspondence between these two worlds. And again, here I restrict, just for describing it a little more concretely, to G equals 0, WR equals 0. And the key observation is an observation concerning the systems of differential equations due to Feigin, Frankel, Zernowski. And we may formulate it briefly as there exists the map sigma from the solutions of the BPZ equations. Well, here I'm a little vague, but I can't write it out in full detail here, but I just want to give you the flavor. So, in fact, it's a map to a variant of the Knisnik-Zamenhof equations, which is obtained by performing a Radon transform on the BPZ equations, which amounts within the equation just to the formal replacements d by d u r. So xr is replaced by d by d mu r, so it's like Fourier transform. And d by d xr goes to minus mu r. And well, that looks still somewhat trivial. There is something rather interesting and non-trivial involved in this correspondence, which is a change of variables. So we have now traded our variables x, which were parametrizing points in band G, for variables mu, which are sort of the Fourier conjugate variables to the variables x. Now we make another change of variables from the tuple of these guys to a tuple of variables y and a variable u, which is not so terribly interesting. And this is defined by the following formula, So we're taking here basically the expectation value of the J plus current in such a conformal block, and we're passing to its zeros as new variables. So I'm taking this neuromorphic function, and as new variables, I take here the zeros of it. And the point is, well, Knishnik Zamolodchikov was an equation which we could write down in terms of differentiations with respect to mu r's. And if we perform this change of variables, then we find the BPZ equations to be satisfied with respect to the new variables YA. That is how it works. I mean, okay. Yes. Yeah, you, okay, yes. What? So, maybe I should draw a picture. So we had here, say, on our, well, that's a 3D P1. So we have here Z1 to Zn, and at each point I should view also the mu sitting. Oops. Okay. And this is now traded. Okay, we should redraw it around. So so here we have Z1 to Zn, but we now have extra singular points, extra marked points, Y1. And in the simplest case, actually, we find n minus 2 of them. And with respect to each of these variables, so these are represented now by these degenerate fields. With respect to these variables, we have the BPZ equations. With respect to the other variables, of course, we don't have differential equations. Well, X became mu via Fourier transform. And so, okay, principle, this was coming from Z1, X1. Here is a Radon transform. Well, then I was going to these variables Z1, U1 at each point, and then, well, it becomes traded for something somewhat less trivial via these beautiful formula. SOV refers to separation of variables, because that's precisely what provides the separation of variables for the Godot model. Well, E is supposed to say a few words on this question, which is really sort of the main thing that we have to work on. The point is that we can construct, well, that we have under good control the construction of Virasoro conformal blocks. So what of the thing that we need as an input in order to use this map, well, which I called sigma, from the solutions of BPZ to solutions of KZ, in order to produce solutions of KZ and therefore conformal blocks. So that's the whole philosophy. We want to use this as a machine to start from something known or under good control, which is Virasoro conformal blocks, to produce solutions of KZ in sufficient number and in sufficient generality as we need it for SO2R within Newton. So we need continuous families of conformal blocks rather than discrete ones. I can vary it continuously on that level. So it's not restricted to. Well, I don't have to. I mean, of course, if I want to do string theory with it, I might want to, it to be rational, but at this level, I don't have to. Yeah, time is running. So well, what I did was giving a nice free field construction, which in fact is powerful enough to calculate monodromies of these guys, and that, of course, gives us, in principle, the handle now via this map to also calculate monodromies of solutions of Kamlochnikov. That is sort of one of the main points, really, that one can do now. And the parametrization, well, that's, as I stressed, is sort of, for me, what this geometric Langlands correspondence is about. Now, in terms of, well, that is what very familiar to all physicists, the behavior on the boundary of moduli space. So when I go to the degeneration like that, so then here to each of these nodes, I'm representing some, I'm assigning some representation W alpha, and varying alpha well, I can vary it in the complex numbers. I generate large classes of conformal blocks and therefore solutions of BPZ, therefore solutions of Knishnik-Samolodchikov. So here, what I get, if you wish, is a moduli space of conformal blocks. If I do it, well, on the more general Riemann surface, moduli space, name, maybe M, C, X, here. Well, X, maybe X, G, N. And the dimension of this guy, well, let me note simply that this is the same as the dimension of the as of the space of au pairs on the Riemann surface here. So let me just observe this in order to indicate that in some sense this construction gives us enough conformal blocks in order that we can recover basically what we had classically in geometric Langlands when we take the limit where the level approaches the critical level. So indeed, the dimension of the parameter spaces already match, simply from the fact that here we are able to vary the internal dimensions continuously. Sorry? Okay. We can discuss this. Yes, in some sense here, of course, well, we're getting the dimension of the space of au pairs. I mean, this is half of the dimension of the space of local systems. That's still true. Well, I wanted to make a remark. There is a, you can put finite dimensional representations on a number of places, and it seems to do the job, let's put it that way, to enhance the dimension to the correct one. Yes. Well, maybe what's important here to note is we can adopt the alternative point of view that we can parametrize, but this needs to be analyzed how well this parametrization really is. I believe it should work, but I have no theorem about this. Well, simply by the monodromy representation of this second order system of differential equations, or in other words, the BPZ local system. That's how I want to refer to it. So, okay. Well, and of course, I have a continuous moduli space for these local systems now, thanks to the fact that these continuous families of irrational conformal blocks. So now I want to say at least a little bit about Hecker operators, because that is, of course, somehow the most interesting part of the story. Let me briefly recall the geometric origin, which was, well, elementary bundle modifications. So a notation that Edward used on Monday was something like this. We want to go from a given bundle to a bundle B prime, such that, what am I writing here? Nonsense. So such that B is embedded in B prime, but B prime is a little larger, just in that I allow sections of it to have poles at the given point Z. I'm maybe a little vague here, but about have poles along certain lines in fiber in the fiber at Z. Let's maybe put it that way. So the question here to be asked is, can we define a reasonable operation mapping conformal blocks associated to B to the Hacking modified conformal blocks like that associated to B prime? Let's note the defining invariance. So we look at the defining invariance condition. So we have to return to the definitions, of course, eta dot B. Now, B is twisted by B prime, so we're taking homomorphic sections of the adjoint bundle, the adjoint V-algebra bundle twisted by B prime. And that, in general, now involves eta, which may have poles at Z. And what it suggests us is that this Hacker modified conformal block can be represented by an extra insertion. That was essentially what Edward already told us on Monday. Yeah, I just took a moment to explain briefly why this seems necessary, just from this way of looking at it. So we're modifying Vn to a Vn plus 1. We're adding some extra representation. Oops, no, I wanted to associate the extra representation to index 0. We are, and the V0, okay, just as an ansatz, we take some arbitrary J0, W0. And, well, in some sense, that's how it must be. But the main question is, of course, which choice here of this guy makes some sense and gives a reasonable sort of quantum counterpart of the Hack operators. And that's what I want to propose a concrete answer for. And that's, of course, one of the main things I want to say here. V0 equals V, K half, and 0, I'm taking j equals k half. Such that, well, I will tell you in a moment why this is the good guy. That is my notation for the space of conformal blocks associated to E prime, the modified bundle. And this is the C2 tensor times the space of conformal blocks for the previous bundle, B. And, well, this was when I fixed the value of Z to some point on the Riemann surface. Now, what happens if I vary it? Well, I'm getting some monodromy representations acting here on the C2 factor, or in other words, a local system. That is my main sort of new thing that I want to propose here. Let me write, in fact, now more precisely the definition of the Heck operator in my physicist's language. I mean, this does not yet. So, here I'm. J1, W1, so on. Maybe let's keep track of. No prime here. So, is limit for mu sent to 0, mu to the 2 plus k, integral dx, that's Fourier transform, to the I mu x. And here comes now the extra guy which I inserted. So, it's k half 0. X and Z. Here I put this choice of a parabolic subgroup explicitly in the notation for this vertex operator. Well, actually, I should maybe then, to be coherent, do this here everywhere else as well. And that is, well, on the one hand, that is, of course, now fully explicit and defined. And what is, of course, definitely intriguing in the relation to the classical notion of Heck operators is to see what happens if here we send k to the critical level, which is minus 2. So this factor just disappears. I send mu equals to 0, so this is just averaging. So let's just push forward. So this formula is quantum deformation of push forward. Sorry? Oh, yeah. Mu is here just auxiliary variable. Actually, it is the same variable as I've been using in the correspondence. I mean, sort of. It's obtained. It's the Fourier. Sorry? No, I'm integrating over x, which is the choice of. Just one mu, yes. Yeah, okay, of course I could do Fourier transform here with respect to the xi's, then I would be in the representation where also those are replaced by mu i's, but I don't have to do that. I want to produce just a function on bund G in the most manifest way. So, yeah, I'm just doing it for the first one, exactly. So now, okay, that is one main punchline. Now it depends on how much time you give me. I have a few words on how to see this, which is basically that, of course, this guy corresponds to a degenerate field which has very special properties. And I have a few concluding remarks, but then. So a few remarks on how to see this, but that definitely will be too brief to really follow this, but should give you some idea. So the key observation is V0 is, of course, degenerate. And it is, in fact, some of the most simple degenerate representations for SO2 hat that you can find, namely the one where this guy here is 0, j plus minus 1. And if you work it through these correspondence, which I've written, so what does the null vector decoupling equation then imply on the right-hand side, on the left-hand side of the correspondence? So what you find is that SO2, so that is the object from the right-hand side, and what it gets represented by is simply the insertion of one extra degenerate field. In some sense, no surprise at all, but there is something non-trivial. Typically, if we insert another extra representation, then what it produces are two things. It produces a singularity at its insertion point, and it produces another degenerate field via this correspondence. Here, the special feature is that it does only produce a new degenerate field. That is why this is so. And that is, well, this extra only, well, this extra degenerate field without anything else, this is now what sort of gives us the local system and so on. So that's represented. I mean, indeed, now, of course, the insertion of this thing, as there are two solutions to the null vector decoupling equation, the BPZ equation, it generates a C2 of, the space of solutions is just a C2, and if I then vary Z, then it represents a monodromy, it generates a monodromy representation. Let's write it formally. And that's how I get my local system. So on the level of the space of conformal blocks with W minus 1 over 2B extra inserted, and then W alpha 1 to W alpha M, say, due to the fact that we have the second order equation, this is just C2 tensor C Virasoro X. Well, without this guy, W alpha 1. And, this, a few remarks to conclude. So on the one hand, I already mentioned Sylvain Ribot and me, tried to understand SL2 conformal blocks for SL2 always, and Witten, the main puzzle was that there are always these mixed singularities, roughly of like X equals Z type. So when certain combinations of the parameters for Bund-G happen to be equal to certain combinations of the moduli for the Riemann surface. And it was not clear at all what is a reasonable choice of boundary conditions, the monodromies around these points. And so now I think this somewhat enlarged picture gives us, new ideas about this. In particular now, what these Hecke actions allows us to do is in some sense to add or remove extra singularities. So playing with this should be useful. What else do I want to say? Well, what is also important to remark is this extra, the insertion of the extra field is closely related to what is known a spectral flow, the generator of spectral flow. And indeed, precisely the same degenerate field was used by Maldacena and Oguri, also in previous work of Fateev and Brander Samolochnikov, to describe the spectral flow in SL2R with Minowitten. And it is closely related to what I'm telling you. It's not identical. There is a difference in the game that one's playing, but definitely, in some sense, I mean, very roughly or morally speaking, you could say spectral flow is the Hecker action, but that needs to be, explained better. It's not exactly this, as I said. And, I think also what is maybe a useful point of view now for us conformal field theorists coming out of this is it might be useful to think really, not of an individual space of conformal blocks for fixed choice of representations, but rather of families thereof related by these Hecker actions. That seems natural and useful, just also from a practical point of view and understanding the relation between the two, between the spaces. I think we can learn, especially, for example, about these nasty singularities that we have. And, in some sense, it seems, but okay, that's all very much in progress. It's all rather new stuff I'm telling here. But there is this kind of highest weight space for the Hecker. So sort of space of conformal blocks with least singularities, which is represented purely by Virasoro without degenerate fields. That is, of course, natural sort of guess that one might have. And it seems that basically one can always, via playing around with these degenerate representations, reduce to this space. And I think a very intriguing observation is simply, if you think about the space of conformal blocks for Virasoro without degenerate fields, this space, in fact, has a natural scalar product. So it has really, it's a good Hilbert space. So now, having the vision that all this should be some sort of, generalization of the theory of automorphic forms, it invites us to think of maybe using this scalar product for really doing an honest harmonic analysis on spaces of conformal blocks, which we definitely can do already on the level of Virasoro algebra. There, it's basically known how to do that already. But of course, now we have to include this extra decoration, which has to do with Hecker action or spectral flow and so on and so forth. That is complicated and needs to be worked out. But I'm just making the remark that it is, to my opinion, rather important that we have this scalar product on the space of conformal blocks of pure Virasoro without degenerate representations. So maybe that's what I want to conclude with.